Welcome to the second micro lecture of IP 304, Posthumous Geographies 1, Underworlds. In today's micro lecture, we'll be talking about the Circle of the Lustful, which is in Canto 5 of Dante's Inferno. We've just passed the first circle of Limbo with the Castle of the Noble Pagans, and we now proceed down into the second circle. To imagine Dante's conception of hell, we might envisage an incredibly large hockey arena, or a large concert venue or a football stadium, under the earth. The ice or the pitch would be the lowest circle, but hell is so large that those on the various terraces can't see down into the center. This center, as we later learn from Dante, is located precisely underneath Jerusalem with the mountain of Purgatory on the other side, located at the Antipodes of Jerusalem. And the Antipodes are the point on the earth's surface where one would emerge if one tunneled directly down from Jerusalem. Each circle, as Dante progresses down, gets progressively smaller and smaller as the punishments become more severe. While Dante enters Inferno via a valley in Italy, the entrance to hell is so wide that it stretches from Italy, past Jerusalem, and towards Southeast Asia. Dante does not tell us the details of how he and Virgil proceed from the first to the second circle. They simply arrive there. This is another element to consider, both in your reading of Inferno and of the other texts we'll examine throughout the term. What details about the space and movement through it do writers include, and what details are omitted in descriptions of underworlds and underworld journeys? Why are certain details left out, and why are others emphasized? Canto 5 contains a circle of the lustful, those who were guilty of sins of love. Here we begin to glimpse some of the structure of Dante's hell, which we'll talk about in much greater depth in Week 4. For the moment, Canto 5 opens with Minos, the same judge of the dead we met in Odyssey Book 11, line 568, in the reading we did from Plato's Gorgias, and who will also show up in this week's reading of Aeneid Book 6. By the way, you might wish to consider the different iterations of Minos in these texts for your reflection paper. Dante transforms Minos, as he does many figures of the classical pantheon, into great demons or fiends, who each guard one of the upper circles of hell. We've already met Charon, the infernal boatman, and here we will meet Minos, and next week's podcast will meet hell's top dog, the three-headed Cerberus. Getting back to Minos, the canto opens with Minos judging the souls of each sinner. We're told that he's a horrible demon with a long, winding tail. There are a crowd of sinners standing before him. They arrive in front of him one by one, confess their sins, and he winds his tail around them as many times as the circle to which they're condemned, at which point they're immediately cast off into that circle. Minos sees Dante and warns him not to be fooled by the large and easy entrance to hell. Once they pass Minos, Dante and Virgil enter into a dark area, filled with a hellish wind that casts around moaning souls. In lines 28 to 33, Dante describes the scene. Io venni in loco d'ogni luce muto, che mugia come fa mar per tempesta, se la contrari venti è combattuto. La bufera infernal che mai non resta, mena gli spiriti con la sua rapina, voltando e percotendo li molesta. I reached a place where every light is muted, which bellows like the sea beneath a tempest, when it is battered by opposing winds. The hellish hurricane which never rests, drives on the spirits with its violence, wheeling and pounding it harasses them. In these lines we might note the increasing darkness. As we saw in Limbo, while things were rather dim, small patches of light came from the natural reason of the poets and virtuous pagans. As we proceed deeper into hell, the light becomes dimmer and dimmer. Such light, furthermore, is also meant to symbolize God's presence, or lack thereof. One of the most profound punishments for those in the castle of Limbo, in the former circle, is that while they have the light of natural reason, it does not lead to the light of God. Similarly, here in the circle of the lustful, the divine presence is even more muted. Such love, then, becomes an end in itself and does not lead to the divine, as will Dante's love for Beatrice later on. Moreover, we might also note the strange punishment for those who subjected their reason to lustful desires. They're blown about by infernal winds, what Mandelbaum translates as a hellish hurricane. In the same way that they permitted themselves to be buffeted about by lustful desires during their life on earth, in the afterlife they're forever driven by powerful and dark winds around the second circle. Now this is a rather weird punishment for those who were subjected to lust, particularly when compared with some of the literature on which Dante was drawing. As you'll see next week in the Apocalypse of Peter and the Apocalypse of Paul, there are some strange tortures devised that are far more literal and sort of on the nose for these kinds of sins. One might note how Dante the poet actually desexualizes lust here. He's far more interested in the psychological effects and the existential experience of desire and lust than in the act itself. This helps underline two key aspects of the structure of the Divine Comedy. The first is the idea that one's punishment in hell